I'm probably going to bust his eardrums before the night's over. If I'm talking too loud. Okay. Because I really don't need this and the microphone. A small story before I start, because I do have a rather loud voice. That my first year of teaching, I taught in Pineville, West Virginia. I actually lived in Pineville and taught in Oceana. And after school, we had the buses, of course, and we didn't have a microphone or intercom. So guess who they selected to stand at one end of the hall and call out the buses? It was me, and no kid ever missed their bus. They could hear me all over the school. I am Janice. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I wasn't nervous until, gosh, a couple hours ago. And on the way down, I went straight from school to Mr. Donut, trying to keep my mind off of it. And I'm sitting in the office trying to read this little book, and they're going, what are you doing? Are you studying for a test? You know, what are you? And I said, never mind. Anyway, I'll just put this away. So on the way down here, I started getting short of breath, and I did what I'm supposed to do. I turned it over to my higher power, took a couple deep breaths, said the serenity prayer, and came in. So I hope you all enjoy what I have to say. And I'm going to begin. I'll start back 32 years ago. I was born in Bridgeport, West Virginia. It's a little town outside of Clarksburg. I have one older brother. He's 5 years older than I am. Had another brother I never knew. He died. He was the firstborn, and he died of pneumonia. So there's just my brother and I. Went to Catholic school in Bridgeport until I was in third grade. And to be quite honest, I didn't quite fit in Catholic school. I think I knew that, and the nuns knew that. And as a blessing, we moved to St. Albans, West Virginia, when I was getting ready to start the fourth grade, and Mom gave us a choice to go back to Catholic school or go to regular, and there was no choice for me to make. I was going to go to regular school. So I went to Lakewood and then to Hayes and on to St. Albans High School. Went on to Marshall and graduated from there. Growing up, from the very beginning, as far as I can remember, I really never got along with my mother. I realize now, 32 years later, that we're so much alike, that's the problem. I vowed I would never be like her, and we butted heads every time we turned the corner. Dad was the good guy who I was much closer to. I always got along with my brother really well. There was the 5 years, you know, difference there, so it made it a lot easier. I was a tomboy growing up, and I liked to hang around with my brother a lot. He didn't always enjoy that, but we were I guess if you want to call it a normal family, I thought. Alcoholism did not play a part in my life growing up. My parents did socially drink. I never saw my father drunk. They had couples in, and they went out on weekends. He would, on weekends, bake chicken out on the grill, and he always knew when it was done because he was finished with a drink. And that would mean that the chicken was finished at that time. So I didn't really grow up with alcoholism, but I guess you could say it was kind of a dysfunctional home. I can remember as early as 10 or 11 years old knowing that I hated my mother. And I told her, and I remember one night, I said, you know, I hate you. And I went upstairs to my room, and I could hear her starting to cry, and she turned to my dad for help, and he said, I'm sorry, you know, but if she feels that way, there's a reason that she feels that way. You need to work that out. But we really never did. I know that my mom loved me, but I didn't think that she ever accepted me for what I was. She's very controlling, very dominating. My brother could get around her. You know, she'd tell him what to do, and he'd go one in the ear and out the other, and he'd hug and kiss her and go off his merry way. But not me. I wanted to stand right up in her face and say, you are not going to tell me what to do. So we had a real hard time growing up. We were a happy family, and Mom and Dad had a real good marriage. But it was Dad who I turned to when I needed help. I can remember growing up waiting for him at the end of the street when he got off work, and I'd climb in the car and tell him as fast as I could everything that happened that day. And I'd even go upstairs with him as he was changing clothes and tell him, and then he'd, you know, go on with the rest of the family. I never really turned to Mom for those type of things. I turned to Dad. He was very quiet and soft-spoken. My mom is a wild Italian. You know, she screams and yells, and you always put yourself at least one floor level of the house apart from her. And then I'd just scream down at her, and she'd scream back at me, and you're going to get it when your dad gets home, and that type of stuff. But Dad never raised his voice. I never was spanked. His alternative was to sit down and reason things out with you, which sometimes was worse than even going ahead and getting the paddling. But I always admired and respected him. He wasn't prejudiced. He got along with people. I don't know how he did it, but he kind of counteracted my mom, and when she was with him, you know, she wasn't wild and crazy. But when he wasn't there, of course, I'm sure I led her to a lot of that. She was pretty wild. As the years went by, things didn't really get better with my mom and I. She wanted to tell me what clothes to wear, what friends to have, where to go, and when. And I just wasn't going to have any part of it. So things really didn't get any better. I knew I loved my mom, but I just didn't like the person she was. I felt that she was a snob, and her and my brother were much closer, and then it was my dad and I, and I just felt like she loved him more, and he was what she wanted, and I wasn't, and I could never be that. Also, it was real crazy. Tom and Mom, if they would ever get in arguments, would scream and yell, and 5 minutes later be hugging and kissing. Well, if I'm going to scream and yell, it's going to last for a while. So I could never understand that. So I'd just go to my room and stay, you know, and my room became my haven. As I grew up, one summer I had broken my leg, so rather than having to go up and down the steps, they got me a little TV. And I had my stereo up there, so that is where I would stay. My dad spent a lot of time out of town. He traveled. So to escape her, I just stayed in my room. I'd come home from school, turn on my stereo TV, and stay there till it was dinner time, and then go back up. So it became a real sanctuary for me, time to think and time to get away from her. I began drinking in probably the eighth grade. Liquor was around our house, and it was never a big deal. I didn't start drinking at home. It was out with girls, and continued to do that until I was 25. I'm sure if I had the disease today, I would be in NAA. Luckily, I did not have the disease because I definitely abused drugs and alcohol for several years. I can remember my dad just could never stand to see anyone drunk. He just thought that a man should be able to hold his liquor. And of course, those were times when we didn't understand about the disease. You didn't even talk about it, let alone know it was. And I remember one time my dad went to pick up my brother at Marshall, and my brother was, so drunk he could not stand up. And I guess my dad really let him have it. I wasn't there. And so Dad brought him home. And I could remember this because I guess I am a caretaker and an enabler. But Tom came home, and Dad even sent him upstairs without his dinner. And here's, I'm sitting down there going, oh, poor Tom, and I want to take him up something to eat. And let me go see how he is. And my dad was like, don't go near him. You know, just leave him alone. And even then, you know, I wanted to take care of him. And I can remember in sixth grade making a pact with a good friend of mine that we were going to become teachers. And as you know, there's lots of teachers in this room. So there's got to be something to our personalities that we attract people who have problems, such as the disease of alcoholism. I went through periods of wanting to be a teacher, to help kids, to being a social worker, to going to Ethiopia, who knows where. I wanted to save the world, you know. And I look back on that. Once I knew I was going to do my lead, I looked back and saw those characteristics very early on of wanting to save people, wanting to help people, wanting to save the world. I, looking back, realize now I also always dated guys who may not have been alcoholics. I don't know. But they always had weaknesses. Emotionally, I always had the control. And I always had the upper hand in the relationships, and I know I picked him out. I look back on it now, and I can see that. And if I did have a healthy relationship with someone, I usually broke it off. I guess looking back, I really didn't want that. I was a good student in school. I was kind of a cut-up, but I was really never in trouble. Didn't really skip school or anything. When I was 17, my dad died of a massive heart attack at home, and my world dropped, I mean, down a black hole, because he was all I thought I had. I mean, I had my brother, but by this time he was away at college, and Dad had been the one that I had looked to for strength, for who I was, because I respected him so much. And so here was Mom and I left at home, looking at each other, thinking, what are we going to do now? You know, I don't like you, and you don't like me. What are we going to do? And people would even comment, you know, wonder what's going to happen. You know, they don't even get along. They don't even like each other. What are we going to do? For the next year or two, I spent real angry. I cried a lot. I stayed in my bedroom even more. I spent a lot of time at the cemetery thinking that Dad was still there. Or if he wasn't, I was going to get as close to him as possible. I isolated myself from my mother. I looked to my brother for the fatherly figure, but my brother was devastated by the death also and couldn't handle the pressure and didn't want that responsibility. So what I did, since I turned to him and he wasn't there, I just built a big wall. And it was a steel wall. And I thought, you know, I've been hurt once. You know, it's not going to happen again. This person was all that I had, and he left, and I don't even understand why. And so that'll be it. No one will ever do that again. At that point, probably even before then, I had stopped attending church on a regular basis. Mom used to make us climb out of bed every Sunday and go. And after that, I know I didn't go to church, but even before then, I probably wasn't, you know, attending as regularly as I should have been. I used to go during the week and light a candle and sit there and pray, but that wasn't good enough for Mom. If you didn't go on Sunday from 11 to 12, you weren't getting it. You know, that's what she wanted me to do. So I did stop going to church. I spent a lot of time thinking he was going to come back. You know, I'd think I'd see him in a car, or he was going to walk through the door. You know, I could not actually believe he was gone. And I thought, he'll come back one day. And I also, and my mom, one night we had gotten into a terrible fight, and I really can't remember what it was, and she said it was me that you wish had died rather than your father. And I thought, what a hideous thing to say to a 17-year-old. But you know what? She was probably right. I mean, I'd never want anything to happen to her, but if I had had a choice, I'm sure I would have chosen my father to be alive. I went off to college and had a normal college life of partying the first year in the dorm. I think I had a 1.7 grade point average. You'll say I was having a real good time. Had a little beer pot belly and made lots of friends. Didn't do very well in school. I had seen, my brother was 5 years ahead of me, so I saw some mistakes he had made along the way, and I didn't want to make them, so I did kind of settle down after that. The next 3 years I did maintain pretty good grades. Relationships in college, I don't know that they were men that were alcoholics, but again, they were men that I could pick out a weakness and grab it for all I could and then go on to something else. I did have one healthy relationship. We were engaged for 2 months and I broke it off, you know, so that, and I look back and I think, gosh, how stupid, but everything's done for a reason. But he was about as normal as I could have gotten and didn't want it. I graduated from Marshall and needed a job, and of course I immediately had to go out and buy a car, so I had a car payment, and I certainly didn't want to stay home and live with Mom for a year or two and save money. So I put my applications in everywhere, and most of the county, the surrounding county, said, well, we'll let you know, and you wouldn't have known until the first week of school. So I went ahead and went to Wyoming County. I had some friends in Beckley, and it's not far from Beckley, so I thought, well, I'll be okay. I mean, the first morning I woke up, I had fighting roosters in my backyard, and they were, like, going wild, and I thought, where am I? It was a real experience. I found that I'm very adaptable. I, you know, they had one blinking stoplight in the whole town. That was it, you know, and you just drove up and down the main strip, and that was about it. So it was a learning experience for me. I lived on my own, and that's what I wanted to do. My mom didn't like one guy that I was dating, and I basically dated him. He was kind of a father figure. He wasn't that much older, but he took care of me, made me feel good. I wasn't really in love with him, but Mom hated his guts. She even threw me out of the house on Christmas Eve because I was sneaking and seeing him, so I just dated him 2 years longer. You know, hey, that's, you know, I tried to tell her that. I said, if you just be quiet, I probably wouldn't even date him. But she kept going on and on. And I look back now, that didn't hurt her. It hurt me more than it did her, but I was going to show her. I just dated him longer then. I met my husband, Doug. Doug went to the same high school I did. I think he graduated before I got there. But he was friends with my brother, so I knew him. You know, St. Almond's is a small town, and I knew who he was. He was going through a divorce. When I saw him uptown, I was in a wedding party, and he was friends. Matter of fact, where's Suzanne? Oh, it's Suzanne's sister's wedding that I was in. And I saw Doug up there several times and was immediately attracted to him. He was the drunkest person in the bar. And that is the person I wanted. And it took me 2 months, and he wouldn't ask me out, so I asked him out. At that time, I was partying a lot myself. I really never thought about someone having a problem because I was doing it myself. So he finally asked me out, and we went out. And, well, it should have been a disaster from the beginning, but it was just fine with me. I mean, I remember he got so drunk on our first date that we were driving 25 miles an hour down the interstate, 64. You know, but that was okay. This was wonderful. So we dated for about 6 months, and he was going through a divorce, and it's really funny. I know his wife, too, his ex-wife, and she even tried to warn me, but I thought, well, that little witch, you know, she just doesn't want me to have him. You know, I know her plots. She just wants him back for herself. You know, that's a big lie. So we started dating in August, and about January, the relationship got serious, and about February or March, he started calming down. Started going out less. About March or April, he decided he was going to stop drinking and doing drugs. And I know now that it was very dangerous, but he did it himself. He stopped cold turkey, and he went through withdrawals and the throwing up and no sleep, and he didn't eat. And I sat there the whole time with a washcloth on his head. You know, I'd go straight from work down to his apartment, and I thought, what a wonderful person. You know, he's stopped. You know, he's not going to do this anymore. You know, this is going to be wonderful. I should say a little bit about Doug. He is an adult child of an alcoholic. His father still actively drinks. His mother left his father after 33 years of marriage a couple years ago. He has all the classic characteristics of an adult child. He was physically abused growing up, as was his mother. I've always liked his father. I love his father, as a matter of fact. But anyway, I thought everything was going to be wonderful. So we decided we were going to get married. And we went ahead and we were going to have a small wedding because he had been married before. And since my father was deceased, I didn't really want to have a big wedding. So we were going to have a small wedding. And then one night we were out and we decided we were just going to run off to Parisburg where he could do it in one day and get married. My mom was like, thank you, God. Because I was living at home at the time and he was living at home. And we fought a lot. And we were out a lot, and so I remember going in one night at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, Mom, you know, Doug and I are going to get married next weekend. And she was like, all my prayers have been answered. And those were her exact words. She couldn't wait. So we took another two couples and ourselves to Parisburg. And this was like at 7 or 8 in the morning. We stopped somewhere and had breakfast. I can't remember. And we were already drinking beer by 8 or 8:30. Okay, we were not drunk when we got married. We just had couples. In between our blood tests, we went to a little bar and shot pool and drank some more beer. But you see, I mean, I didn't see anything wrong with that. You know, he had cut down. He wasn't going out that much. And when it was with me, so that wasn't any problem. We got married, and everyone had told me the first year was the hardest, and actually our first year was the easiest of the seven, looking back. It was wonderful. We kind of hibernated in our apartment and had fun. I think we did drink socially, but he was never really drunk, and we didn't go out or anything like that. So for the first year, year and a half, things were really good. Things that were important to me in the marriage, and I had told him that before we got married, were communication and trust and respect and love. And so being an adult child, he wasn't used to trust and communication. So we really worked on it. Every day we'd come home from work and sit down. We wouldn't just say, hi, how are you, how was your day? But we'd really talk, you know, about feelings and what we were going through and what we were thinking and feeling. And our marriage was a really good marriage. Deeply loved each other, had the trust, had the communication, had the respect. And then I saw some changes. The eating habits were changing, the sleeping more, he was sleeping more, taking more naps. He always hated his job. From the first day I have met him, he hated accounting. He was an accountant and just didn't like it. And I would say, well, if you don't like it, you know, try something else. And so he started complaining more and more about the job, and he started getting migraines. And then he had some neck problems from a car accident that he had had. So he decided to go to a doctor for his migraines and for his neck problem. He tried a chiropractor for a while and then decided to go to a family doctor and then a specialist. And those doctors happened to prescribe pills for the migraines and for the neck problems. I knew 6 months before someone had to call me if there was a problem. His speech would be slurred. His eyes would be red. He was clumsy. But like most of us in here, I didn't want to see it. You know, I just thought, well, it'll go away. I never confronted it. I never asked him. You know, I thought in my mind the doctors had prescribed them, so everything's fine. You know, a doctor prescribed them. He can do that. I did know that when he drank beer, he was all right, but when he drank liquor, one drink, and he couldn't stop. And when he was with me, he was okay, but when he was without me, he had no control at all. He stayed with that job when we were married, for a couple years, then went to another job. He decided that, yes, he hated accounting, but he just needed a change of pace. He was going to go into another job. So he started another job, and finally I had to get a phone call from a doctor telling me that he had been there asking for prescriptions that he didn't really feel that Doug needed, and that he felt like Doug had a problem. And I was so mad at him. How dare this person call me and tell me that my husband has a problem? And then my brother confronted me with the same evidence, and so I confronted Doug. I can't remember if he admitted it or not. I really cannot remember that time if he said thought he had a problem. He denied it. I do remember that, and he was angry that someone had called me that he considered were friends of his. We kind of let it go at that. He said he was going to control it and everything was going to be okay. And then one night, he didn't come home from work. And I thought, oh, he must be working over. And I called the place of his business, and he wasn't there. And it got to be 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and I figured that he wasn't going to be coming home. I did go out and look for him. I think I went out, it must have been about 1 or 2 in the morning. I finally had had enough. Of course, I cried, smoked cigarettes endlessly, and had diarrhea. And all the classic symptoms of us couch potatoes who wait for our husbands to come home, or wives. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I was so mad. See, first I went through, oh, poor thing, is he all right? You know, and then I was like, gosh darn him, I'm going to get him. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, I was tired of waiting, so I went out looking for him. I went to every bar parking lot from here to St. Albans. We lived in Hurricane. And I couldn't find him. I get back about 3 and his car is in the driveway. And I am so mad. You know, because when you see him, you're like, all right, they're alive. Bam. You know, I was mad. Because, I mean, once you're so worried, oh, are they going to make it home alive? And then when I see his face, I'm like, well, I can't tell you what I say, but you get really mad. So I see his car, and I'm furious. I get out of the car, and I call his name. He's not anywhere. Well, he's passed out in the bed. He had, you know, come home after I had gone out looking for him. And to back up a little bit, he had told me when we were dating that he did have a really bad temper, and that to please not confront him when he was drinking, that to wait till the next morning. Well, those thoughts never entered my mind. I went to the bedroom. He was passed out cold, and I was screaming and yelling, and finally I said, and by God, I'm leaving you, and I'm getting a divorce, and bam, within 3 seconds, he was up out of the bed and after me, down the hall. Luckily, the grace of God, he did not touch me, but he tore my house to bits. I mean, he ripped phones out of walls. He picked a big reclining easy chair up and threw it. I was sitting there thinking, if I can just get out of the house, I'll never say anything again. And he wouldn't let me out of the house. He wanted me to watch him tear up my house. And he knew, I mean, at one point, material things meant so much to me. Thank God that they do not today. But he knew that was going to kill me, just watch everything be ripped and broken and everything else. So I tried to get out of the house, and he wouldn't let me. And finally, I did get the keys, and I thought I had gotten his keys, too, because I didn't want him driving. I just wanted out of the house. But he had a spare. So he got in his car and left, too. And then when I finally realized he was gone, I came back. And, I mean, I was so afraid. I mean, he could have killed me in one swoop. And he's not that big of a person, but I guess when you get that angry, you don't realize. Because the things that he did that night, a normal human being who's not under that type of circumstance could not have done. And, I mean, I was scared to death to even fall asleep that night. I was like, I don't even know what time it was by then, but I was vacuuming, you know, where he had broken stuff. And, I mean, I was shaking, thinking I'd heard, you know, sounds. So needless to say, after that, I did not ever confront him again when he was drinking. I was not going to have my house torn up, and I certainly did not want to die. But I knew at that point that we had big problems. I was getting reports inadvertently from the boss's wife. Happened to work in the office. The boss worked over at the stone yard, and the boss's wife worked there, and she knew he was getting a lot of phone calls that weren't really normal. She knew people were coming in the office that really didn't have any business per se there, and so she would drop little hints to me that things were going on that really should not have been going on. There were a lot of promises during that time. A lot of I'll never do it again, a lot of I love you, and I'm sure all of you all have heard all of those before. But as I know now, which I didn't know then, the disease was getting progressively worse. And I knew about a year before he finally went into treatment that he really couldn't stop, because I had seen him try to stop. He even came home one day and said, you know, I'm really going to stop, I'm done. And I watched him again go through the withdrawals and the shaking and the throwing up. And a month later, you know, he had started again. So I knew at that point that there really wasn't anything I could do. I've tried everything that you all have tried before. I tried threatening, I tried crying, I tried screaming, I tried being wonderful. As it got toward the end of the disease in its stage that it was, I did stop enabling. I did stop. I used to call in work for him and say, darn, Doug has a migraine this morning. You know, he just can't make it, where he had really been out the whole night before. So I did stop calling in work, and it was real funny. I guess he didn't believe me, but I had told him one day when he was sober, I said, I'm not going to call work for you anymore. I'm not going to cover up, you know, with your family. I will not go and tell them, but if they ask me something, you know, I will. And I guess he didn't believe me, so he was out all one night, came in at like 6 that morning, and I got up and went to school. And I didn't call in work. So I come home that day at 4, and he said, what'd they say when you called in work? And I said, excuse me? And he said, what did they say when you called into work? And I said, I didn't call into work. and his eyes got this big because he hadn't called either. And by that time, they also at work knew that there was a problem. So as the time got nearer, I did stop doing some things for him. I'll never forget him getting in his car one day, and he said, "What do you want from me? You know, I don't know what you want." And I said, "Well, all I want, you know, is someone to be a partner, someone I can trust, someone I know that's going to come home, and I know what condition they're going to be in." And there are many things I did wrong looking back, and I'm not going to blame myself. I'm not going to beat myself up for it. There were times that I was even happy or felt in control when he would leave that house and I knew what he was going to do. Because then, in my mind, I could say, "See, he's so weak, and I'm so strong. You know, that poor thing." And I felt superior. There were times when I was very degrading to him and said a lot of terrible things. But I had the disease too, and I didn't know it. And I was being affected just like he was. So I can make amends for some of the things, and some of the things I write off to a bad experience that I hope I don't live through again. I hope I know better the next time. The final straw was his mom decided to leave his father, and I don't know why that shocked him. I mean, he used to beg his mother to leave his father. But his mom decided, and she wasn't going to tell the father because, you know, he was actively drinking and he was also very physical and she had been abused by him. So she just got her co-workers together, and one weekend when Wally was away, she packed up everything. She already had her apartment and she moved. Well, for some reason that was very devastating to Doug, and I'm not an adult child, so I really don't understand everything, but that was the final straw for him. And that very day that she moved out, he went out. I think he didn't even go to work that day. And he went out, got drunk, got in a fight, and was hospitalized. I didn't even recognize him the next day. And he lost his job, lost his company car. And my brother and my nephew, who I dearly love, was coming in from Maryland that weekend, and I went right ahead with my own business. He called me from the hospital and said, "Please come and get me." And I said, "No, I'm sorry. You know, I can't do that." I knew a friend was with him, and I knew he was being taken care of. So I went ahead and had my weekend. I enjoyed my nephew, and then Sunday came, and I just went to him, and I said, I'm crazy, I'm nuts, I'm losing control, I'm drowning on your ship, and I can't go any farther. You know, you're going to have to admit you have a problem and get help, or I'm leaving." So he had tried. He had gone up to the care unit, talked to a counselor, and he had gone to one AA meeting, but they talked too much religion, he said. So he didn't go back anymore. And as we know, he wasn't ready, and he only heard what he wanted to hear, so he didn't go back. But he did go that Monday while I was at school up to the care unit, and he was admitted on a Tuesday. It'll be 2 years in May that he went. It was Memorial Day, as a matter of fact. I was so relieved when he said he was going, and I can remember driving him up there. And then once we got there, they had me fill out some forms, and I just stayed for a little while. I can't remember driving home. I must have been in total shock. And I was so relieved that he was there, but it was like, I was standing outside, it wasn't really happening to me. You know, I knew he had a problem, but to actually then take him there and leaving was really the black and white. It was no longer gray. You know, your husband has a problem, you know, and he has to go. This isn't very nice. Anyway, they told me when I took him in that he would probably stay in, I forget what they call it, but they can't have any visitors, and they can't talk on the phone. They said it would probably be 3 to 5 days, maybe 7, depending on, you know, what he'd been using or drinking. Well, he called me the next day, and he was already out, and I was mad. See, I knew where he was, and it was safe. And I just wanted him to be there and leave me alone. I got the first night's rest that I had had for ages. I knew where he was, and it was safe. And I was angry that he was already out of that little room, and I could go up and visit. So I had to deal with that, too. But the first Saturday workshop was on the disease of alcoholism. And I didn't know it was a disease. I had no idea. I knew it was something he didn't have any control over. But I learned a lot while he was in treatment, and a lot of the anger and resentment went out. They teach you how to communicate again, because that's gone. You know, you don't even talk about the weather, let alone the disease. So I learned a lot while I was in treatment, and I'm really thankful for that. They talked about Al-Anon a lot up there, but Doug and I had talked about it, as I've told you all, and we decided that Janice was too strong and I really hadn't been affected, so I didn't need to come to Al-Anon. So I didn't come to Al-Anon, but he was going to his meetings every night, and making lots of friends and growing, and here I was being mad on the couch because we live in Hurricane and most of the meetings are in Charleston, so he was leaving from anywhere from 7 to 7:30, not getting home till 10:30 or 11. And I thought, good Lord, this is a bit much. So finally, Joyce did call me, and the first meeting I came to was a speaker's meeting. It'll be 2 years in August. I really do not remember who was speaking. I do remember that I listened to the story. Whoever it was did a really good job. I heard a lot of strength and hope in that open speaker meeting. I don't remember if I met anybody. I don't remember if I got literature. I don't remember if I got a phone list. I just knew I was here, you know, and I was nervous, I know, being here. I'm with a crowd of people, and I was looking around to think who was going to know me in this room. And I was thankful we didn't have to say our last names. You know, I thought that way no one will know who I am, you know. The longer I came, the better it got. There were many times I sat in here and I did not understand what people were saying. But I always took something home with me from the meeting. May have been a couple words, a smile. I've just never been in a place where people just openly embrace you, no matter who you are or what you look like or what you've done. And that really impressed me. And Doug and I could share the program also. You know, we'd share, you know, some things we had heard at our meetings or something like that. So it was nice. I'd really never, you know, when you go through that disease, you isolate yourself. So I'd isolated myself from, you know, friends didn't come over anymore. I didn't call them. I didn't talk to anybody at school. I went in my classroom, shut the door, taught, came home. And here, you know, I had people who understood. And I felt that we're instant friends. So for any newcomers, if you don't understand what's going on tonight, don't worry. You know, the more you come back, the more you'll understand. I can remember, and I've told this story too, somebody in here had the bright idea to do a step a Monday, and then they were going with the traditions a Monday. And I thought, good Lord, how many months is that? You know, I don't want to do this. Because I wasn't really, you know, I was only like on the first, second, or third step. And I thought, what am I going to do? I'll just stay home. You know, and I came and I learned so much. And whoever's idea that was, it was a wonderful idea. And I'm really glad. Because even if you're not working those steps or traditions, you still can learn things. Sobriety in our home lasted for about a year and a half. During that time, we worked on our relationship. I handed back some responsibilities I had taken from him. Last summer, in the past several months, I've worked on letting go and let God, live and let live, because I'm a real good person, just like Mom, to dominate and control. And that's what I had done with him. I had never let him be him. And I never thought he was a good enough person to be him. So I'd just be him, too, and me. I mean, you know. I will honestly look back and say that I'm sure I did not appreciate sobriety for what it was. At first I thought it was a miracle and it was wonderful, but I became complacent. I took it for granted. It was there every day. Gosh darn, it was going to be there every day. You know, I didn't look back to what had been before, and I don't think we really should. But I don't think I'm real bad about giving pats on the back when they're due, especially to my husband, because for so long I didn't think he deserved any pats on the back. And not that any of that has anything to do with the fact we don't have sobriety today. I just think there were some things I could have done differently, but I think I did them as well as I could at the time. I saw the relapse coming on a couple months before it did, and they taught us in treatment. There's a whole checklist, and even before they actually take a drink, you can see the personalities change. You can see the behaviors change. The eating habits changed. The naps got longer. The thinking changed. the lies began. And the actual relapse happened right before Christmas, which I've heard is one of the most popular times that it happens. It's around holidays. When I saw some of the changes start, I did confront Doug. I tried in a supportive way to say, here are the things that I see. Do you want to talk about them? And we talked about them a little bit, but it never went any further than that. He had stopped going to meetings. He went to one a week if he went to that. He had stopped communicating with his sponsor. And, of course, it was everyone else's fault that he had done that. You know, and I realized through this program and coming here every week that there wasn't a thing I could do about it. It's like you can see it coming, but there's no way you can stop it. And my family, bless their heart, you know, my brother was like, well, do something. Can't you do something? And I'm like, no, there isn't anything. You can turn it over. And Paula, who's not here tonight, heard a good thing where she actually visualizes the person going into your higher power's arms. And that's what I've been doing lately. I have to turn him over. There is not a thing I can do for him. All I can do is be here and get better myself. After the relapse at Christmas, of course, the promises came back, and he was going to stop, and he was going to go back to meetings, and so on and so forth. It has not gotten better. In fact, it's gotten worse. As we all know, it's a progressive, incurable disease. He's back to beyond step one. He doesn't think he has a disease. And it's not funny, but I had to laugh at him the other night. Bless his heart. I mean, really. He sat there, and we were talking about it, and he said, you know, I've been thinking about this. He said, I don't even think that, I'm not really sure I have a disease. He said, I think I could probably drink every once in a while, and it'll be all right. And it's not funny. You know, and I wasn't judging him, but it was amazing and baffling to me to see what the disease had done. It wasn't him, it's the disease. And I finally separated those two. I love Doug. I don't like the disease. I don't like what it's done to him. But it's just like when I sit in my classroom working with my LD kids, to know they have it up here, but when they get it from here to here, it changes, like was changes to saw. That's how the disease is. I was thinking about it. To me, it's like a bear in hibernation. It lays dormant for a long time. It never goes away. You know, it'll rise up a little bit and go back down. And his is out full force. And thankfully, I have this program. I'm not saying that some of the days haven't been black recently, but they don't last as long. They're moments and hours rather than days and weeks and months. We, as you all know from the goodies every Monday, have recently purchased a business. And that was real frightening because we were getting ready to sign papers when I knew that he had relapsed. And all I could do was pray and turn it over. And I honestly did not make my decision on whether to go into that business with him until the actual day of the signing. And I turned it over, and I feel that I've made the right decision. I have been working two jobs, and it's really kind of strange. And I know I've heard it here before, but they say that things happen for a reason. And I wasn't planning on getting involved in the business until summer when I'm off. And for some reason, I jumped right in January, and I'm trying to learn the business. No matter what happens to Doug or to my marriage, I'm going to be okay. And I'm going to make sure that our business is okay. I'm not Superwoman. I can't do everything. But I can make sure that some paths are covered. When I don't go to meetings, I can really tell. And to be honest with you, since the relapse, I haven't missed a Monday or Friday, I don't think. Because I know now that if I miss them, my thinking changes and my behavior changes, and I can't afford right now for that to happen. I never wished the relapse to happen, but it's certainly gotten me in gear to work my program and to butt out of his. It's so difficult. I mean, I'm still so controlling and so dominating and so verbal that I want to say, get up out of the chair and go to a meeting. Do something. But I can't do that. I cannot do that. I can be there and be supportive, and I can accept that it's a disease. But one thing I have learned in here, I do not have to accept unacceptable behavior. I don't have to make a decision today. I'll make it when I'm ready, if I need to, about my marriage. I never want to go back to the way I was before. Before I came into this program, the last real bad memory I remember is me sitting in the middle of the floor. I'd been out mowing the grass, and he was off on another one of his weekend sprees. And I was crying the whole time I was cutting the grass. And I finally went inside and sat down, just like pulled my hair and was screaming and crying. And I finally, it's the first time, I probably since my dad died, that I asked God to help me. Because I knew, that I was like close. I don't mean anything drastic, but I was sick. I mean, I could not think rationally. I was so confused all the time. And things were whirling so fast that I just couldn't think. And I never, ever want to go back there. And I can't say I know that I never will, but today I won't go back there. I'm not going to do it for today. All you have to do in this program is be willing. It sounds easy. It's not quite as easy as it sounds. You can think it, but you have to feel it. You have to really be willing. I used to just pray and just, all right, hurry up, you're late for school, all right, and go through the prayers real quick and get out, and it doesn't work. You know, you have to feel them. You have to really try to live that program for that day. Last week, like I've said, I've been physically turning Doug over to my higher power along with my family, friends, and relatives. And I've actually made myself sit down and make a list of gratitudes, and I have so many of them. You know, yes, I may not have sobriety, but I've got my health, my life, a job, family. I've got Al-Anon. I've got you all. And when you actually make yourself sit down and think about that, you almost get embarrassed for feeling sorry for yourself, you know. And it was time for me. I think I mentioned that my birthday was not too long ago, and that was the very night he was out. No, poor Janice. You know, look at her life. You know, it's her birthday and her husband's out. You know, and my family, bless their heart, feeds that right into me. That's right. I'm not going to cuss tonight. He's a real jerk, you know. You shouldn't stay married to him. You're too good for him. And I set up my chair even bigger. And I've really tried to talk to my family. My mom tries to understand. My brother really does not understand. He's very resentful. And he's just not educated enough, and I try. But Mom does try to understand. But I'm her daughter, and I should also go back, because my mom and I didn't speak for a year and a half. I told her how I felt one day, and I'm sure it wasn't very nice, and I really can't remember. It was over the telephone, and she hung up on me and told me she never wanted to speak to me again. So there was a year and a half when Mother and I didn't speak, and my husband got us back together, and ever since that time we have become friends. Not only mother and daughter, but friends. So I can share this disease with her, and she is willing to listen to me and try to understand the disease. She has been a real support for me, and I'm very, very grateful for that today. I've learned to take care of myself. I've learned to turn a lot of things over to my higher power. I take them back sometimes, but I am more willing now to give them up. Just like on the way here, I was like, it's yours. I mean, I'll do the talking, but please, you've got to help me. And he did. You know, he just did it, and people sit up here and say that, and I'm like, oh, sure. You know, they just like get up in front of people, you know. But he really, all you have to do is say, please help me, I need help. That's all you have to do is ask, and you get it. It may not be exactly what you want, but you're going to get the help that you need. I need to remember that I have choices in my life today. I need to remember that I'm dealing with a disease that has affected me and my husband. And most of all, I need to remember that if I don't have anything else, I have this program. I have meetings to come to. I have friends in Al-Anon. And to end, did pretty good. Only a couple more minutes. This is one of my favorite little pamphlets. It's just for today, and I just wanted to read a couple of them. to you all. Just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle all my problems at once. I can do anything for 12 hours that would appall me if I felt I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. It's real important to me not to let myself be affected by what's going on with my husband. People at school have noticed a change in me, and I want it to continue. I want to grow. I want to feel better. And the longer I come back to this program and work my program the way it's supposed to be worked, I do feel better. I could not have gotten through what I have gotten through the past several months without this program and without you all. And I do appreciate that. I am a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. And I'd just like to thank you all for being such a good audience.